Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Hopefully there will be no echo issues today, no sound issues today. So hello, everybody, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. I trust you have had an interesting and auspicious and intellectually stimulating weekend in which I have been proved right about certain predictions I made 2 weeks ago about certain unfortunate events. So cheers, everybody. He'll be late. Mr. Pepper, he'll be here. He'll be here. He's always late. There's a certain quality to him that we're not allowed to mention which causes that. So cheers, everybody. Cheers, Alexander. Cheers, Paul. Cheers, Pepper. Cheers, K-Piss, K-Piss, K-Piss.
Lachaim.
Saludo, Salou, Proust, Prost.
Yakida.
There's Rodney. And Turbo Sexy and Skull and Slanger and Slangervar, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are, of course, an online public house. Meets on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss based science and stuff that's gone on in the news, and Jason Arday and all kinds of other stuff. And we have a very special guest for you today, and that is...
Oh, he's frozen.
The artist and poet, Mr. Alexander Adams, a returning guest. So I would like Alexander to say hello. So Alexander, say hello.
So greetings to Ed and Paul. Thank you very much for inviting me. Looking forward to this evening and glad to be back with you.
Excellent. Pleasure to see you. And he's the author of two books of poetry and drawings, which I have over here somewhere in the dark.
I have not the review copy of your book yet, Alexander. What's it called?
Well, it's top secret, but if you feel like you want to announce it on the stream...
I don't know. I haven't had a copy.
Well, that's because it isn't published yet. It's not published until the 8th of September.
Right, well, I'll shut up then.
No, since you've kind of pre-announced it, I might as well tell everyone that on the 8th of September, my next novel is published, and it's called White Spirit. It's about an art college, so it's not about...
I thought you were talking about Ed's average tipple.
that's appalling calumny, as you know. It is white wine, which is my average tipple. Look, where is he? I'm going to message him on the old Twitter. Where are you? Anyway,
he's at his interview at Jesus College.
He must be. He must be. He must be. Right. Okay. Now we're praying, Lord, Father in heaven, Heavenly Father, in Mormon terms. I'd like to just pray. There's no problems with Lipton sound. In Jesus' name, amen. Right.
Amen.
Lipton, is there a problem with the sound?
No, there isn't a problem with the sound.
Okay, now, Alexander, speak.
Hello.
Hey.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well done.
Hello.
This is brilliant. The person's mentioning plagiarism in the chat. No, my colleague Richard Lynn was found guilty, and I was found guilty on the grounds that I was his co-author, which is a thing I've always been resentful about. Right, so
Ed, before you carry on.
Yeah.
Will you apologise to Lipton, because it wasn't his fault last week, the sound, and you
calumniated him. I already did apologise, but I want a
public apology now with a dunce cap
on. I'm very sorry.
I don't want to hear about that, Ed. Why do you keep saying that Richard Lynn was a plagiarist, Ed?
He wasn't, but he was senile and he made
a
mistake.
He's not a plagiarist.
No, he made a mistake. Will you listen? He made a mistake because of the confusing information that was sent to us by the Finnish military, and consequently, a person's master's thesis that should have been cited, that should have been clearly cited, wasn't, and therefore, me and him were done for plagiarism. That's what happened.
Exactly. Anyway, my point.
I'm just telling you, I know, but look, you've got corruption in academia. He was a right-wing academic.
I think me and him is very poor grammar.
Oh, well, yeah, I should be done for that as well. Anyway, cheers, everybody, and cheers, Alexander, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. So, an interesting thing happened on Saturday morning. I woke up. And I had this weird memory, or was it a dream, that I'd been on the radio and I wasn't sure. And so I checked my mobile phone and I had like missed calls from numbers I'd never heard of and messages about coming on the radio or coming on this show anyway. And I thought, what the hell is this? And it gradually came back to me. that I had indeed been on something called Talk TV on the Friday evening. And I actually said to a friend of mine, Alex, I said, a different Alex from this Alex, I said, well, what's going on? He said, I can't believe you can't remember whether or not you went on. I said, I don't know. And I couldn't remember the name of the thing I'd gone on. I couldn't remember the guy that was the host. I couldn't remember anything. I just had a vague memory of someone looking at me angrily and thanking me. And it turned out that is what had happened. I was Mrs. Dawson and I drink white wine on a Friday evening. I'd had about a bottle and a half, and at that point I was telephoned and told, you've called it, Ed, you've called it. And I said, I've called what? You've called it, Jason Ardet has died, and you called it, which I had no memory of doing. But apparently in a video a few weeks ago, I said that he would be likely to kill himself. And unfortunately, don't laugh at him, it's not funny. And he did. I was okay, and then within a few minutes of that, suddenly I was rung up, and so I don't remember what I said, but I got all this positive feedback from the show host. So even really pissed, I must have been saying articulate.
And can I ask the question that everyone in the comments is thinking? When you woke up and you couldn't remember what happened, was your bottom sore?
No, I hadn't accidentally slept on the wine bottle. No, I'd just slept in my
or gone out to find a driving instructor or whatever.
No. No, none of the. Fortunately, there was no driving involved. That would have been catastrophic in this country to have been that much over the limit. But no, so that's what I did. So yeah, he has ended himself. We have to be careful using that word, don't we? On the old Ed Stradamus, Tommy is saying. Well, it was obvious, really, because he clearly had this grandiose narcissism, and he was rendered a collapsed narcissist, as Richard Grannan would put it. And so his whole means of regulating his negative emotions was taken away. Plus, he's obviously quite a low agreeable person, not a very nice person. And these are the two things, I'm afraid, that predict... doing this. Well, that also in low intelligence, because then you get yourself into these difficult situations and can't work out how to solve them. Low conscientiousness, again, you get yourself into difficult situations and you do impulsive things, such as... low agreeableness, because you get yourself into difficult situations and you don't create strong bonds with people, and you feel a strong desire that you can't go... feeling that you can't go on, you can't cope with it, it's too much for you and you shouldn't have to cope with it because you're so brilliant. And then you think, I'll show them. I'll do this, and then everyone will feel all kinds of love for me, and they'll feel really, really bad. And in a sense, I'll have the power in the end. Bugger the fact that I have two children and how devastated they'll be. Bugger the fact how my mum feels. I can't see a way through this other than being shamed for the rest of my life. So I'll do this and I'll show them. And that's what I think, unfortunately, seems to have happened. What are your thoughts?
Don't you think you're being a bit unkind, because you've been blessed or cursed, depending on your point of view, with a genetic complete lack of shame? So it's difficult for you to empathise with his mindset.
There's some truth in that. Yeah, those of us that don't feel shame but can shrug it off.
Or can't remember what they did on a Friday night.
Or can't remember what they did, but that wasn't my fault. That was because of the wine.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. I'm not taking responsibility for what the vino did. In vino veritas. As well, nor do you, as a proud Liverpudlian, take any responsibility for that.
I've never drunk white wine, champagne, but white wine is for the plebs. It's infradig.
It was some organic white wine.
That's even worse. Some peasant socks in your wine.
Oh, right, okay, fair enough. But I do. I mean, it's awful that it's happened. But I prognosticated that it would occur, and I was right. And I think this is partly the fault of these woke people that have put him. He should be just a PE teacher at some secondary school somewhere who's called Mr. Ardet, and people go, "Oh, Mr. Ardet, did you know Mr. Ardet used to play for Crystal Palace?" And then somebody else, like the head of history or something, Mr. Doran, says...
But Ed, I don't mean to preempt the whole discussion, but isn't...
Then don't then! Let me finish my anecdote!
Yeah, it's going on for quite a while.
What?
I thought it was the spirit of that Australian woman had come back from last week. I was going to ask seriously, though, don't you think everyone, it's a big red herring, whatever happened to Jason Ardet was tragic... But everyone's still fixating on him when the people who were responsible for putting him in that position, the newspapers shut up. So the Daily Telegraph was story after story after story, and I think they overdid it. And when after he died, I think there was, I think there's something like the Daily Mail had an apology on page 13. The Telegraph didn't write anything. Now, if his life and death meant anything, they should go after the people who allowed it to happen. And they won't, because they're all little Cambridge chums in the same old incestuous cesspit of privilege. And I think by
Were you rejected from Cambridge, Paul? That way
no, but I've met them. I've met them, and I really... The number of midwits I've met in Oxbridge colleges, some people there are absolutely brilliant. Some of them are absolute midwits who've got there through their incestuous social ties. And that's the real scandal. And the fact that Cambridge, Jesus Collars Cambridge, has plumbed the depths of academic standards. Not just Jason Arday. There's a whole raft of education people.
Oh, there's others. There's others. A woman got in touch with me last night, confidentially, and talked about the people at Oxford. Incredible things that's going on there that's not come out yet, that probably will come out. But I was particularly amazed by Sir Simon Baron Cohen, first of all, defending him and saying, oh, this poor guy, he's an autistic and he will... this will send him over the edge and this is terrible. Stop bullying this man that's autistic, which is bizarre because couldn't Simon Baron Cohen, who is a top psychologist, see that this isn't autism? There's no reason to think it's autism. This is something cluster B where you say that you're autistic to get attention and to get sympathy. And then he took his name off the petition, the Good Law Project petition in support of Jason Arday. And then... So he's basically kicked him in the bollocks while he's down by doing that. And then he's saying, oh, Jason Arday rang me just before he did the deed and was saying how upset he was and whatever. Oh, he was my friend. Well, if he was your friend, then why didn't you keep the support for him? I mean, it's extraordinary behaviour. Alexander, our esteemed guest, what are you thinking?
I think a lot of people were making hay out of, they were sort of claiming that, you know, they were backing him to the hilt. And then, of course, when the lies were exposed, they were running away as fast as possible. Now they're kind of rushing back and saying, oh, well, he was my dear friend and I'm profoundly touched. And I wish, you know, I wish I could have had a chance to sort of change his mind in those last hours or whatever. And I think that it's a very serious situation. And I think you're right that the scrutiny should be turned on the institutions and all of the journalists who didn't do their job initially, who didn't raise the obvious questions. I think it's very sad that he was put in that position. I mean, obviously, he contributed to it. He got himself in that position. But there is no way that if Cambridge had been functioning as a proper university, that he would have got that far.
No, it's like making a child the captain of a seafaring vessel. Yeah. A very narcissistic child. There's a cartoon, I don't know if you've seen it, where you have Jason Arday wearing Superman clothes on top of a tower saying, I can fly! And this woman behind him that's meant to be him and Hillary Kremen, the boss, saying, I'm going to show the world! And then you see him just jumping off the thing and falling down. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that one of the reasons why the press went so hard on this is that I think that a lot of people, a lot of ordinary people are waking up to the problems of DEI and they are terrified because all the institutions are completely, thoroughly riddled with this. Education, politics, the media, even charities, NGOs, ordinary business life is riddled with this. And they're suddenly wondering, well, there is nothing secure. There is nothing that works that should do. Everything's breaking down and we don't know who to trust and we don't know who's competent. We don't know if our children are going to get into a university through merit or they're going to have to lose their place to someone who's being appointed because of a quota system. And people are panicking. And I think that plus a combined innate drive for sort of fairness and wanting to see things being done on a level playing field led to such a very strong reaction against what was exposed about him.
There's someone in the chat, Paul, saying that he subscribed solely to hear the banter between me and you. The banter between me and you is so infamous.
That person needs to get a life.
I agree.
So, I mean, I would argue, let me put something to you, Lipton. You obviously, you've a master's degree at the University of Glasgow. And everyone's going on about Cambridge. Cambridge. It was the University of Glasgow, your alma mater, that made him a full professor, which then paved the way for him to be a full professor somewhere more prestigious because he was already a full professor at Glasgow. They took him from being just a university lecturer at my alma mater, Durham, and made him into a full professor. And that was an extremely, that's you could argue, that's causal in, that's heavily causal in all this, what the University of Glasgow have done. Because he couldn't
Lipton,
have applied.
Lipton, can I ask you, do you feel that your master's degree has become devalued? Because we do.
Me?
Yeah. Because you went to Glasgow and they were largely responsible for what happened. Do you want to apologise to everyone now?
No, I'm going to answer it. I'm going to
Did they only let you do a master's degree because you're black?
No, I'm going to answer you and then answer it. I don't think that my MSc from Glasgow is devalued because the students who attend Glasgow, apparently, they get excellent A-level grades. A-level grades, where grades to enter the University of Glasgow are really good. The teachers at Glasgow are quite rigorous people, especially the STEM teachers. I was told by somebody that the computer science students, many of them did not do well. About one-third of the students, they got a certificate and not a degree because they couldn't muster
They couldn't turn the computers on.
To pass the exam. I did a humanities degree.
Book fast.
And when I did a humanities degree. And my teachers, I would say, were quite rigorous markers. They found it difficult to give an A. And I explained the story with my thesis all. I explained that story all the time.
About 20 times.
Exactly.
I don't remember it, Lipton. Could you say it again?
No, one person gave me an A, one person gave me a B, so they settled on a B once. I would say that Glasgow standards are quite rigorous. Are they employed by Glasgow? Yes, Glasgow standards are quite rigorous, but it's also a woke university. So the many people at Glasgow, even staff members, they would say all women are. I don't remember. Oh, what do those trans activists say again? Trans women are women, something like that. So the lecturers at Glasgow were quite woke. I was in a class once. The teacher posed a question. Students raised their hands, right? Even I did. And he said, only the students who should participate should be students who are not white men. So I said, okay. Then I did this. And he said, the only students who should participate are students who are not males, because the girls were not participating. Women are not overly confident. Men are. So the lecturers are quite woke, and that's why Jason Hardy got the job. Remember, DEI is not for black people or even blacks who are just a little below the standard. DEI is for political black people who can be repackaged to sell a story. So Jason,
what about my idea? Can I say two things to you, first of all? This is a poem, which I think sums up your feelings with regard to getting a merit rather than a distinction on your master's degree. I've got the motive, I've got the stamina. I'm going to kill the external examiner. Let crows and vultures pick at the carcass after I've murdered the stingiest of markers. Bring out the bin bags, bring out the spades, bring down the evil sot who brings down the grades. Give me an alibi, give me a gun. Wanted a first, but I got a 2-1. Only just missed a first by a fragment of a fraction. Justice is called for, justice in action. What a bloody miser, what a bloody crook. Won't mark another paper, won't write another book. Won't see his bloody name in another bloody journal. Bye-bye, examiner, bye-bye, external. Is that how you feel?
Okay. So, DEI works when you can be repackaged to sell a specific story. So, I could not be repackaged by Glasgow to sell any unique story. I went to university in Jamaica. I graduated with a first. Before attending that university, I went to a super exceptional school. That's not necessarily grammatically correct.
Did you win the Australian equivalent of the Booker Prize?
Yeah, but I went to a really good school in Jamaica. When I did CSEC, I placed for a subject in the Caribbean, because in the Caribbean students are ranked, and then I did Cape, and I placed again for Cape, and my school.
Yeah, Lipton, stop talking about yourself. Can we focus on the actual subject of matter? I know that the.
So I'm telling you why I couldn't be repackaged to sell a story.
I know part of Jason Arday's thing was autoethnography, which is basically nonsense. But explain, don't you think that the University of Glasgow holds quite a lot of responsibility
as the middleman,
the go-between?
Glasgow is a tough school to get into, and it's a tough school to teach at, and they made him a professor.
No, you're wrong. That's inaccurate. What happens is people from Western Scotland go to Glasgow University, Northern Scotland, Aberdeen, Central Scotland, St Andrews and Dundee, and South, a bit of Scotland, they go to Edinburgh. That's not that difficult. It's not.
Well, most of the south of England go to Edinburgh.
Well, that's also true. But I remember that when I applied to do my degree, I looked at the grades for Edinburgh. They were much lower than the grades for, like, even, it was like three Cs at A-level to do theology. But anyway... that's by the by. The point is, don't you think, don't deviate on the subject off the subject of this onto the subject of you and how you're black. Just concentrate on the question. don't you think that the University of Glasgow is getting off quite lightly, considering they're the ones that made it?
Yes, because the Glasgow resume, that was the launch pad to give him the job at Cambridge. So I do blame Glasgow, but look. Suicide is unfortunate. These people are unusually harsh on Jason. And I say this because if you listen to him or follow his stories, it's obvious that the man was mentally unwell. He was mentally unwell. And not only was he mentally unwell, but this man was not a Donald Trump-like character. He didn't have the most aggressive personality. People are saying that he was narcissistic. I would say that he was a vulnerable narcissist because he killed himself. He had a weak sense of self. So I think the media should have reported on the story, but there was no reason for the media to be lacing him with vitriol every day. There was no reason to be talking about Jason Hardy every single day.
But the reason, can I push back against that? The reason why they were talking about him every day is because something else emerged every day.
It wasn't like,
there's nothing else in the news, so let's keep going about Jason Arday. It was something else.
Ed, would you take my point that if you got rid of all the Jason Ardays in the world, all the DEI, that's not still the structural problem at British universities? The standards have gone through the floor, and that has nothing to do largely with DEI.
I would agree with you. Yeah, I think this is a debate I have with a lot of people on the right. They blame things like DEI, or they blame the Jews, or they blame whatever. And so with regard to or immigration, they blame that. But with the decline in intelligence, for example, that's happening independent of all these things.
No, but that's the crash Darwinist. There's a simpler explanation.
It's not the crash Darwinist. It's stating that there is a fundamental explanation that people don't want to hear, and they come up with other things. With the university, I would argue the fundamental problem, well, there's lots of problems, but one thing is just tuition fees.
Right, but what about the simplest explanation of all? If in the Premier League, 50% of the population were entitled to play in the Premier League, don't you think the standard of football would go down?
Yes, I do.
Well, that's what happened in education. It used to be an elitist pursuit, and now anyone, even those people who functionally can't read, can go to university.
I agree, even if we isolate the good universities, the really good universities...
They're no longer good.
No, I know, I agree with you. But when they were on that border, kind of when I was at university, then people... One of the real problem is tuition fees, because when they first had tuition fees, the age of majority was 21, and you went to university if you were rich and mummy and daddy paid your fees, like they paid your fees to go to school, or if you got a scholarship to go to university, and you were poor or whatever, and you got a scholarship. But either way, it was like a school, and the idea was that you do as you're told and you learn from people, and that's it. Once you bring in the students themselves paying the tuition fees, because you've got mass education, as you say, Paul, and then you've got these fees that the students have to pay because the parents can't possibly afford to pay them, then you've turned the students into customers, and the customer is always right. And that's a really, really serious problem. And it wrecks the whole thing. The very idea that they can say, I'm offended. We were told on our first day at university by the head of our college, you may be offended by what you're told, but if you are and you can't deal with that, then maybe you shouldn't be here. And that was what he said. That was back when the tuition fees were £1,000 and mummy and daddy paid that, unless you were really poor. So, and it moved to 3,000 and then it moved to this absurd 9,000. And they, it's crazy. That's what they should get rid of, the fees.
And I have another point again. I think that other than probably some science subjects, universities should get rid of coursework, especially in light of AI.
Yeah. Or as Paul said last week, and then again and again and again because of the echo, they should, as Paul said about 10 times last week, they should just handwrite it, make them write it out.
No, get rid of coursework. Even if you have internal assessments that don't contribute to the degree, the final grade should be based on your external, well, it's not external because it's in the internal, it's internal in the university, but your final grade should be based on your university exam results.
Well, yeah, is that changed? Because when I was there, the only coursework was your dissertation.
That was exactly my point. And if you're doing a master's degree, probably it should just be straight dissertation. You can still do coursework, but the coursework should not contribute to your MSc or MA. It should be straight dissertation.
You mean like, what was it called? A summative essay. What was it called?
You do internal essays in class and get a grade, but that's just for practice. The real essay comes from your dissertation. And when you start to judge people solely by their dissertation, we're going to witness an explosion in the disparities between men and other groups, because even though at elite universities like Oxford and Cambridge, men still get more first-class degrees than women, I do believe that when we grade students solely on dissertations, the feminists are going to get angry because the performance of women is somewhat inflated by coursework.
Yeah, it is. And also by just male variability hypothesis, men should get more outlier high grades. Well, and more outlier low grades. But that is true. But I'll move on then. The next thing I was going to, in relation to this, and they're not really talking about this in the newspapers, is threats to Nathan Coffin's life on Twitter, which I'm being told by idiots that respond to my videos, I have blood on my hands.
No, you don't. And neither does Nathan Coffin's.
No, but that's what people seem to think. That you, the idea is that you shouldn't. What they seem to be saying is essentially you should put people in positions where they have influence and where they're important and whatever, but you shouldn't subject them to criticism in case they top themselves. So by extension, let's stop criticising Nigel Farage, shall we? What if he hurts himself? What do you think, Alexander, about that weird situation?
I think it's kind of proves a lie that this is the just be kind crowd. Because they're very keen on saying, oh, you know, just be kind, be compassionate. And then as soon as, you know, but it's always sort of friend-enemy distinction. It's, you know, be friendly to the to our client group. But if you are an opponent, then, you know, you need to hang your head in shame and look over your shoulder for, what was that thing? I think someone was tweeting about that.
Leo Kears was tweeting about it.
Yes, yeah.
Look over your shoulder for the rest of your life.
Yeah. So, and it's like, oh, that's nice. So, you know, we're not supposed to hold people responsible and check that they're actually raised, they're actually doing the proper teaching and they actually are who they say they are. You're not allowed to do that. But if you say that, well, we should be doing that, then you're responsible for anything that happens, including someone ending their own life, which is absurd, because it just shows that it's a purely self-interested pursuit of political ends, and it's not anything to do with being kind or being compassionate or being humane. Because if you were kind or compassionate or humane, you wouldn't elevate someone to a position that they were not capable of fulfilling. That's cruelty.
Yeah, that is cruelty. It's like elder abuse or parentalization of children.
It's terrible for his family. What's happened to his family? I know that he is partly responsible for it, but it is terrible for his family. But it wouldn't, as you rightly pointed out, Ed, in your last video, your last single video on this, that in a very, very thoughtful and considered way that you suggested, well, you know, that he was only in that position because people needed him to be in that position to prove some points and also to offer false hope. And then when his world came apart, they were nowhere to be found. They'd run away.
Yeah, they run away.
On the back of that, could I just give a special mention to my namesake today, James O'Brien, because he played, as usual, absolute blinder. So he supported him initially. Then he started slagging him off when that was the current trend. And now he's in the worst of all possible positions. The irony is, if James O'Brien had stuck to his guns and stupidly defended him, he would have at least been consistent and had some principles. Mm. But to say James O'Brien called himself a mug, that doesn't even begin to describe the scale of that man's stupidity. And can I remind everyone again, he wrote a book that was along the lines of How Never to Be Wrong.
I mean, it's more than stupidity. It's just total cowardice. It's cowardice. I like a phrase I've coined. It doesn't actually work as a phrase, but dogmatically wrong. I don't mind people being wrong. Be wrong. I've been wrong about various things, but in general, I'm kind of I think it's this. I could be wrong, but I think it's this. I didn't used to be like that when I was younger, but now I am. But it's when you're absolutely certain you're right. And you're wrong, and you condemn utterly as evil those that disagree with you, and then you're wrong, and then you change your mind in light of new evidence, or simply because that's the way the wind is blowing, and you say things like Liz Truss, oh, I've been on a journey. Shut up, you've not been on a journey. You were wrong, and you were certain in your wrongness. And now you've got a new thing that you're certain in, and I'm sure at some point you'll change your mind on that as the wind changes or whatever. You go from saying, I'm a friend of the LGBTQ, I'm the biggest friend of the LGBTQ, to saying, oh, I'm a traditionalist and a traditional conservative. Shut up. And before that, you weren't even a conservative, you were a liberal Democrat. And you dress it up with this ridiculous metaphor of I've been on a journey. Well, what about those that haven't been on a journey? What about those that were just correct in the first place? Like me.
There is no journey. It's just elite people lying to extract value from the culture. There is no journey. And both sides are equally repulsive.
That guy, the prodigal son in the Bible, right? Fuck him. Oh, he's been on a journey, has he, from being a degenerate slag to being he's realized and he comes back and the father. There's a brilliant Stuart Lee and Herring sketch on this. And he and the other son says, well, hang on a minute. You kill the fatted calf for him and he gets half of the farm. That is not fair because you already gave him half the farm and I've been working on it and it's not fair on me. Like, why does he get another half and he get the fatted calf? And that is, although Stuart Lee is insufferable, this is, and Richard Herring threw my friend Nick Dixon under the bus. This is a very good point. Why shouldn't accept the convert? The convert is unstable and crazy.
Yeah, but Ed, you're the theologist, isn't it? Isn't it possible that parables are deliberately designed to be counterintuitive and enigmatic? So you're looking for common reason and common sense in a format that was never designed to be such.
You make a good point. So what you're saying is that Jesus is basically pretentious and a suit.
No, for example, maybe the farm that the prodigal son was going to be given half of had massive debts allied to it and the local Judean mafia were going to kneecap him and the father wanted the good son not to have that fate.
That's a good point. But why didn't Jesus make that clear? Jesus should have made that clear.
Because that the parable isn't supposed to be clear. The parables aren't instructions on a vacuum cleaner. You're the theologian. Parables are enigmatic.
Yeah, but they're enigmatic in the sense that the metaphor never entirely works, but they're not enigmatic in the sense that there's meant to be a message that you can get from it that is more than just esoteric.
But do you think your spectrum tendencies might be a bit affecting your interpretation on this one, Ed?
Well, I think there's general agreement on what the appropriate interpretation is of the parable of the prodigal son. I think it's not, there's not much debate about it. It's not like that weird thing in the Old Testament where they shag their father or that weird things like that. I mean, there's reasons that's happened to do with translations and linguistic stuff. But Or that, but no, I don't know. Well, anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, the conversation between you and James O'Brien is a mug is boring. I wanted to make a better point.
Are you going to make a better point, or are you just going to talk about
what I was saying? Both sides are repulsive. The people who defended are repulsive, and the people who are basically berating him for committing suicide are equally disgusting.
No, they're not, right? So you're saying committing suicide is okay?
No, it's not okay. It's unfortunate, but let's be realistic. People who commit suicide, they're unstable. They don't think that they have another option. So after the person committing suicide, it's really tacky to be saying, oh, he was a coward. He was not thinking about his family.
Yeah.
That type of discourse is not relevant. So close. What about
the discourse? I said that one of the things that you find with people that do that, and also with martyrs as well, is it's associated with narcissism, and it's a way of being empowered and feeling superior forever. In that moment of death, you know that you will be brilliant and amazing and godlike forever, and you will have taken revenge on your detractors, and that's why they do it.
Could I make a quick point of information? Lipton accused you, Ed, of not being relevant. Well, that would be against all the values held dear by this channel if you were.
No, I said the conversation between both of you.
Yeah, but you introduced the measurement of relevancy, and I object to that on principle for this channel.
That's
well, Ed, in the grand scheme of Ed is not relevant.
What?
No, in the grand scheme of the world, Ed is not relevant. No, look, I like Ed as a person.
But he's not relevant.
I like him as a person, and I like...
I'm beginning to lean toward Lipton's argument now.
So I like Ed as a person, and I really like to read Ed's books. But as an individual, I don't think Ed has the markers of a true eccentric.
Are you saying that my white life isn't a value as a white life?
Not quite, but I want Ed to be so much more, and he's just not that person yet.
All right, so you're my magic Negro, are you? You're gonna make me that amazing that guy Mr. Candy from that film. I see. That's very kind.
I want Ed to be like a grumpy 19th century. Our early 20th century researcher, not a charisma, let me not use the word charismatic, not a Twitter influencer personality. I want him to be like a Richard Lynn, who was not on Twitter.
Well, no, but that's because he was a very elderly man.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want you to be
a very elderly.
I really resent the passing of Richard Lynn. I want him to come back and tattoo Van Heenen.
Tattoo Van Hanen.
I want them to come back.
That is a shame that he died before I could interview him on the channel. He did write me a letter once thanking me for my review of his book.
Yeah, his son was a prime minister, Finland's prime minister.
His son was indeed Finland's prime minister, and Lothario, that used to have sex with various women and then have onion soup after sex. that's what he used to do. He used to regularly have onion soup.
Was that to disguise the tears?
I mean, the prime minister or the father? Which one? Tatu or the son?
No, Tatu was the father, and his son, Matti Vanhanen, he was the prime minister.
And
I met him once. He was very tall, really tall.
Was he the sex addict?
Yes. I don't know if he's a sex addict, but he had affairs and things.
Only ever onion soup, Ed? Was it other soups?
What the particular woman that went to the newspapers said it was onion soup. That's what she said.
It's post-coital depression, and the tears were hidden by the vapor of the onion soup.
I have to say this now, Ed. I was on Twitter, and people, they were talking about you and Emil Kierkegaard.
Oh, yeah.
They were blaming
two names that are always in the same sentence.
Yes, on Reddit, they were saying this is because of people like Emil Kierkegaard, and they're funded by Mark Andreessen, and I'm like, you idiots, the dissident right literally ran out of money.
Mark Andreessen does give me money, though. That is true.
Really? Mm. Why?
Because he likes my channel.
No, he's a subscriber? Mm. Oh, okay, that's interesting. He follows me on Twitter,
I don't know why. Though.
Okay. Well, good. But I don't see how me or let alone Emil can be blamed for what's
because
happened.
Because of Mankind Quarterly, they're even talking about Reginald Gates.
Ed, someone's calling you out in the chat. Loretta has reinterpreted the Prodigal Son story.
Yeah.
And said that this Prodigal Son didn't get a further half. The father told the elder son, all I have is yours. The Prodigal Son got a celebration, fatted calf, that's all.
But he shouldn't have got the fatted calf, should he? The fatted
calf. But you completely misrepresented the actual parable, which I told you was more complicated. Well done, Loretta.
Thank you. Well done, Loretta. And
it's good to see that a Durham theology degree was a complete and utter waste of time, thereby proving my point about standards at universities.
Because I did Corinthians as part of my degree. I did Corinthians. Didn't do that as part of my degree.
What's Brazilian football got to do with anything?
What?
What's Brazilian football got to do with anything?
Yeah, very good. That's very good. No, I did Corinthians, and I believe I did what I did in my first year. I can't remember. I didn't do any New Testament in my third year because I did Old Testament. I preferred Old Testament, it's more interesting. But what did I do in my first year? I can't remember. Romans in the first year. Okay, so good. We're about to speak. So it was all very good and fine and much better than a degree from Edinburgh, which is where actually a lot of people that failed their first year then started again at Edinburgh and St. Andrews.
You make stuff up.
That is true. Not Edinburgh, but St. Andrews. That is true.
Yeah, a bit of a difference.
Well, okay. All right, now, although it was 3 C's, was the A-level offer for theology.
I'm surprised it was that high for such a stupid subject.
Let Ed speak, Paul. Let Ed speak. Is he sure he's a star?
Communication testicles or whatever it is that you did at the fucking Edinburgh.
He's a star. Let him
economics
speak.
And politics.
Economics and politics. Sorry, Alexander. Paul is very childish, but we keep him on because if we overpromote him because otherwise he might kill himself. So
Ed, I'm not childish. I'm puerile. It's an important difference.
Yeah, remember that girl, that woman that said that we were puerile shite?
Yes,
what's
I remember.
What's her name?
Can't remember.
There was that woman who said it's puerile shite.
Can I shake her hand?
But what was so funny was it took her about 40 minutes to realise that. So she obviously wasn't the sharpest knife in the picnic box.
No, she wasn't. But she thought about it for 40 minutes and she thought, this is puerile and shite. And I'm going to mention it in the chat. I'm going to say that. They need to know. They need to know. Why do they need to know, dear? Said her wise husband. If they don't know, that they, how will they improve? But do you think that calling I might just upset them and provoke them? No, I think it is puerile shite. That's what I'm going to say. Anyway, fuck her. Right, okay, we're about halfway through. So those of you who are new, hello, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are, of course, online public house. We meet on Mondays at 7 PM UK time, 2 PM New York, which discuss based science, psychology, stuff in the news, and stuff that is increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. If you knew, would you do us a favor? Would you please subscribe? Could you subscribe on YouTube? Could you follow me on Twitter? That's at Jolly Heretic. And follow Lipton on Twitter, which is at Lipton Matthews, probably, or Lipton _ Matthews or something. And could you subscribe on my Substack? That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most base stuff that I don't put on here. In-person interviews, vlogs, blogs, films I make, such as my brilliant film about Moldova. And where, if you like what I do, support the cost of a pint of beer a month. Next to me, we have, remember, there's my new book coming out quite soon, Borderline Personality. Borderline Genius, Borderline Insane. I'm studying borderline personality and how female borderlines have shaped history. Next to me, we have Mr. Alexander Adams, and he is a poet and artist. And so if they want to find you online and help you, Alexander, where can they do that and how?
They can find me on Twitter on Adams Artist. They can go to Substack for alexanderadamsart.substack.com. They can see my artwork on alexanderadams.art. They can also buy my books, including this book, How to Start a Dissident Art Movement, on any good or even bad bookselling website.
And if you hold that book up more, you can see a little bit of Alexander's own arse.
Oh, not quite.
This little tiny bit. Okay. And that is what Alexander's back looked like. I've met Alexander, and he is very muscular. He's very, very, very muscular. And then we
I
have.
Bet you've seen that view of his back as well, Ed.
only because we were showering after a manly game of squash. Okay. Then we have Lipton Matthews, and so will you please subscribe to follow Lipton on Twitter, which is @Lipton_Matthews, I believe. And also various books that he has that are available on Amazon, and then also he has a channel, Lipton Matthews, so go and subscribe there. And he's part of my channel as well. He's also part of Jolly Heretic Universe. And then we have James O'Brien as a mug, otherwise known as Dr. Paul Taylor, and his channel is called Readers of the Lost Art, which takes a sort of Edmund from King Lear sort of look at the world. Of art and literature. So please go and subscribe.
Can I plug the latest video, Ed? I did one that very cleverly, I thought, linked the self-improvement industry of Tony Robbins and company with the subject of hemorrhoids.
Excellent. Well, go and have a look at that, chaps. And go and have a look at Paul's hemorrhoids. And I mean, Paul's hemorrhoids in relation to Tony Robinson. And that's
Tony Robbins.
Is that the hypnotist guy from that film where Jack Black?
No, he's the self-improvement guru. Who says he's not a guru?
There's a film with a chap called Jack Black, and he goes out with this girl that's played by Gwyneth Paltrow, and she's really fat, but he's hypnotized to only see internal beauty.
I know that movie.
I can't what it's called, but I think that's him. That's him. He gets trapped in a lift with Jack Black, and then he hypnotizes him to only see internal beauty.
No, let's get back to it. I haven't finished this yet.
So go and subscribe. Oh, Shallow Hal, that's correct. Shallow Hal. So go and subscribe over there. Okay, we have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic, Mr. Quim, and he has sent in the following poem apropos today's discussion. We've witnessed the fellow decay of fantasist Jason Arday. One thing is true, the media crew will mention it. Day after day. Indeed, they will. Thank you very much.
Whee!
I discovered that term, fellow de se, this morning, and I put it as the title of this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Please, if you like Mr. Quinn's poetry, which you should, then please go and purchase his book of Jolly Heretic poetry, which is available on Amazon, and subscribe to Mr. Quinn's Facebook, YouTube page thing, and also follow him on Twitter @ResidentPoet at the Jolly Heretic. So go and Mr. Quinn isn't watching, but Mr. Quinn is in Sardinia, I believe. So thank you very much. Cheers, Mr. Quinn, who I discovered a bit of trivia in the 90s, he represented Nottingham University on University Challenge. There you go.
Well, Mr. Quinn?
Yes, Mr. Quinn. And he sent me a photo and everything. And they got quite far. They beat like an Oxford College and things like that. So that's pretty cool, Mr. Quinn. He was on University Challenge in 1997.
No, my point again, Ed. Jason Arday died. It's unfortunate that he died. As I said, there was no reason for the media to be lacing him with vitriol every day. But now that he has passed, there is a need for reflection. And these publications, why are they not publishing more pieces on Jason Arday?
Surely now that he's passed, then we can lace him with vitriol every day because it's not going to affect.
But they're not. Look, I'm willing to listen to different people. As I said to you before, I don't really have the time for those who want to say, okay, we, like somebody said, he killed himself, therefore he was brave, and I respect him. That's just out of touch. But I want good articles on the institutional rot that killed him. I have a piece, it should be published somewhere. Institutional rot killed Jason Arday.
Can we publish it on the Jolly Heretic?
Oh, I sent it to. Okay, all right, I guess so.
Okay, that is true. No sensible situation would ever have allowed this ever. That is completely true. It's just crazy. But it's not uniquely crazy though. There's other people like him. Like he wasn't noticed for this situation to be bonkers until he was at Cambridge. And then people started looking into him. So you're going to have plenty of other people that are useless and do nonsense and whatever that are there because they're black or because they're gay or because they're trans or because they're whatever.
Do you think the fact that he claimed that he got a big book advance deal and then, of course, he had his memoirs coming out, do you think that kind of hastened things and sort of concentrated attention?
Well, why would it do that?
Well, you know, because obviously he was going to be getting a lot of attention because of this memoir. And so people were starting to pay attention in a way that they hadn't really, even though all the facts, you know, his claims had already been out there for quite a while. And I think there must have been a degree of sort of professional jealousy as well from some of the journalists saying, I personally don't believe that he got over £1 million for his memoirs. Yeah. But I think that there was a feeling like, well, he's getting something from this, you know, and I think that journalists may have thought, well, okay, well, I think it was a feeling that it was a combination of, as I said earlier, it's a combination of feeling uncertain about the whole DAI thing and just worrying about the whole structure of society because so many things are going wrong. And then the other thing is, you know, it might just be, you know, just this sort of professional jealousy, this sort of resentment and a sense of...
You had... My understanding is that you had I forget the name of the guy, it might have been Mill or something, and he was a professor at Plymouth Marjon or something. I'd never even heard of it till this came out. And that he had contacted Arday with his suspicions, and Arday had rung the police. And then he was told not to contact him again because it was damaging his mental health. So yeah, it's possible. It seems perfectly possible that this is not a coincidence. Yeah, that this book was coming out. I mean, I think that the amount of money he claimed was an advance, which seems most unlikely to me, considering that it's only the book of some obscure academic that not many people have even heard of. Came out during the furore, didn't it? And he said it was once he was already being questioned.
Those books earn very, very little. The sales figures are tiny, although they get big puff pieces all over the media, sympathetic pieces in, you know, the Times Educational Supplement and The Guardian and all that sort of stuff. They sell virtually none.
No, exactly. He wasn't just a pathological liar. I think he was a compulsive liar. He had what's called mythomania, where which correlates actually with borderline personality. Where it's not kind of sensible lying that's believable, like you might have with someone like Donald Trump or whatever, who's a grandiose narcissist. It's just ridiculous, impulsive lying in the moment that you don't even think about. Like this thing about him suggesting that he was on 7-Up, it's just a crazy thing to say. But in the moment, he thought, oh, I'll say that. And he might have regretted it afterwards saying it, but he said it and it was recorded. And I think it's 1.4 million advance for a book that, okay, it's with a big publisher that you have to have an agent to be published with. But the idea that implies they think it will make at least 1.4 million. He'll get the advance back. It's crazy. So I think it was just a compulsive lie that he can't help. But yeah, that's probably it may well be relevant that this was coming up. Although ironically, I suppose quite a lot of people might buy the book now, though, simply because of all the controversy that's been.
Yeah, the sales figures are going to be much higher now than they would have been before. But you know, unfortunately, he'll not be around to benefit.
Alexander, I think you're a genius. Yes, let me tell you why. Obviously, Jason Arday got a job that he did not deserve. He was promoted beyond his level of competence. Yes, people are upset. Am I upset that Jason Arday was a professor at Cambridge? I was bothered because he was not fit for the role. But did he deprive me of a job? No, he did not. Even if I were a white man with a PhD, did he deprive me of a job? Theoretically, yes, if I were interested in being a sociologist, but if I don't get the job at Cambridge, I can go elsewhere or I can work in a profession outside of academic sociology. And this is my issue with the people who are against DEI. I am against DEI too. I'm against DEI to the point where I think we shouldn't even be talking about black people. But if you are displaced by somebody, whether it is an immigrant, a woman, or a black person, what do? You reinvent yourself. Sometimes I want opportunities, I don't get them. What do? I have to move on. I have no choice.
But Lipton, so, if you're not getting a job because you're black, you can't reinvent yourself as a white person and vice versa. Judging people by their race is what's wrong.
She reinvented herself as a black person.
Yeah, well, normally, Ed, you can always think of an exception, but in general, it's a bit difficult to completely reimagine your own race.
But Jason, Ed was talking about the link between low IQ and some of the negative social outcomes. Again, Jason, our day is no longer alive. But the reality is that somebody who was intellectually astute would have written several books about his experiences to make more money. You would have been a grifter. Like Stephen Glass wrote some book, and then somebody said that Jason Blair apparently also wrote a book. Stephen Glass was this man at the New Republic who made up stories, and Jason Blair was a black American journalist who was also a plagiarist. He fabricated some of his media work. I expected that Jason Ardi was going to go into the thought leadership space. I was expecting him to become a speaker and collect speaking fees and accuse critics of racism and write more books to make more money.
Could have narrowed this down, because there are some people in the comments saying if obstacles arise, you just have to overcome them. And like Lipton says, reinvent yourself. But one point that's being missed is we're not talking about the private sector. We're talking about institutions that are paid for by public taxation that have become reserved spots for various small groups of people who think they're entitled irrespective of their merits. So if there wasn't public taxation involved, you can create clubs for whoever you want. I've got no problem with that.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. We're funding this. We're funding nonsense.
Yeah, the BBC's been corrupt for decades, and public money, they blackmail the public or have their foot on the neck of the public to pay for all their fees, and they're unaccountable largely, and that's wrong. It's not barriers per se. It's which institutions have them on what basis.
Yeah, and you have to sit there and watch your brilliant examples of literature be infiltrated with political woke political messages and you know, it's appalling, and the people are compelled by law to pay a TV license for this.
Exactly, that means to be privatized.
Well, yeah. And now they're trying to, because what do you call it? Zoomers don't watch TV essentially. So now they're trying to come up with other ways of raking the money back. What they did in Finland was they just made it part of general taxation, because Zoomers don't pay for TV licenses in Finland, and so they just made it part of general taxation to fund YLE, which is obviously no one as bad as the BBC. But it's total sociology is total horseshit, says Gerbert Quinfin in the chat. No. Sociology done properly can be, you know, rigorous, and it's quantitative, and it can get interesting results. But that's frequently not the case. And he wasn't even sociology; he was education studies, which is actually quite a difficult transference to make in academia. So anyway, he got.
Didn't Ed? I'm pretty sure you know Dinesh D'Souza, the American conservative.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it might have been as early as the 1980s, he wrote a book called A Liberal Education, and he picked on education as a subject as being the one with by far the most PhDs awarded to ethnic minorities. So the scam has been going on since, I might be wrong, but I think it was around about the late 80s he published that book. So this is my point about structural problems. Everyone's going on about Jason Arday. This has been going on for decades, and it needs to be addressed.
There was a study on this in American data. The average IQ of a person that has a PhD in education in the United States is the same as the average IQ of a person that has a bachelor's degree in science, biology, for example, in the United States. So that's how low the standard is, that their best people, their PhDs, have an IQ of 115. And that's the same as the IQ of a person that has a bachelor's degree in biology.
But education is suffering from the replicability crisis. I think it gets the lowest grades for replicability. People who do PhDs in education usually are not astute individuals.
But they've replicated themselves brilliantly.
If you want to teach, get a specialist degree. If you want to teach mathematics, get a degree in mathematics. If you want to teach history, get a history degree. Don't get a degree in history education or geography education. Just get the normal degree.
Well, yeah, but there was, when I did my degree, there was a guy that was from the education department, Jeff something or other, and his area, he actually did really good lectures, and they were actually really interesting. And he was in the education department, not the theology department. I think his name was Jeff Astley, probably related to Rick Astley. But well, I heard the other day on the radio, I heard, you know, that Phil Collins song about hurrying love or whatever it's called.
You can't hurry love.
But I hadn't heard it for about 30 years. It's really good. It's really catchy. Anyway, that's, I digress. So the education departments are a complete waste of time. And the people that were doing degrees education at my university were basically stupid women.
I mean, we talk about mobile phone notices now.
What's that?
The notices. Oh, yeah. Good idea.
Let's move on. Good idea. Right. So I'll leave this to Paul to start because I didn't even know about it. Paul,
right. Well, for non-British people, and Alexander can back me up because I'm talking about this as an expert, as someone who doesn't actually have a mobile phone. But the whole of the UK got sent out an official government warning on mobile phones. And the funniest thing was, I was in a North Wales fish and chip shop, and only one person in the fish and chip shop read Welsh. So the announcement came out on their mobile phones really dramatically in Welsh, and no one knew what it was saying except one person, which is another story. But it turns out it was this incredibly important public announcement they'd use an emergency system for, and it was to tell people not to light barbecue fires because there's been dry weather. Unbelievable. You couldn't make it up.
This is correct. I got my emergency. I mean, and they sent it twice as well, so my phone was wailing away. And unfortunately, my phone is so basic and so simple, I got it because I didn't want email. Didn't want to be distracted. I wanted to be able to sort of switch off my mind and not track my work and so forth when I was out with the phone. And it's, my phone is so crude and so basic, there is no way of switching off this alert, this government alert. You need to have some sort of Android or some Apple device where you've got sophisticated settings and you can change the settings. But it's so basic, you just can't do that. So I am lumbered with it. I would have switched it off otherwise.
But people thought, you know, quite reasonably, it could have been an announcement that Putin was about to vaporize us all. And
excuse my ignorance, but when have you last had one of these alerts?
I had one about 6 months ago where they warned me that it might be a bit windy and rainy. So the idea that this alert was shocking, it was a shocking breach of trust. Well, it was, but the thing is that I got one of those 6 months ago where they thought it might be a bit too rainy for me. So, yeah.
But Alexander, it is supposed to be for emergency public information announcements that are incredibly serious. And this is the nanny state we live in. You have to be told not to have barbecue fires when there's a drought.
Well, they're queuing this up for climate lockdowns. So what they're doing is they're seeding you with the idea that we're on the edge of a climate crisis, and they use climate crisis.
But Alexander, it's also stupid within its own terms, because loads of people have now opted out of the system in disgust.
Yeah, I know.
So
it's an unintended good consequence.
Yeah, but they're that thick. They can't even nudge people with all the psychologists they have at their disposal. It's the height of stupidity.
And wasn't it set off by the substitute prime minister at the moment, who's standing in while the alleged prime minister is off on holiday?
Oh, you mean that thief? That woman that's a thief?
Well, this is the joke that I read. Someone said Louise Hay is her name, and she in the past... failed. She reported a stolen phone that wasn't stolen, so she was found guilty of committing fraud. She is in the Cabinet Office in the UK government as a convicted fraudster. So what does that tell you? And then someone online was saying loads of phones went off in her house. It must have been very scary.
So, but you were saying, Paul, that people thought this idea, are you serious, that Putin was invading or something?
Well, people think if you're going to get a national government warning, and the only funny thing about it was, if that ever happens in future, the Welsh in Wales will hear about it first, and only any non-Welsh readers will have 5 minutes of blissful ignorance. So the Welsh are punishing themselves by giving that sign first.
But also, it was a serious problem because, you know, there were people who were driving on motorways.
Yeah.
And they've got their phone in the back, on the back seat or something, and they don't know what's going on, and they can't pull over because they're on a motorway. I'm sure it must have contributed to some accidents. It interrupted lots of theatre performances because it overrides the silent lock that you can have, the silent setting. It automatically goes off as audio.
Right, but most people would just think, I've got a text message and carry on driving.
Most people who are not actually engaged in something important or in the middle of a sort of a public situation, they would just say, this is ridiculous, you're pulling my leg, and dismiss it, which is what I...
That announcement could have been made in the newspaper. The government could have purchased advertising space in the newspaper. The BBC could have given their usual state lectures. Secondly, I have been following the Climate Hysteria project for a long time. Controlled burning can prevent forest fires. Controlled burning. Read Ralph Alexander's research.
I also understand that in the Middle East, they regularly interfere with the weather patterns and cause themselves to have rain. So why didn't the British do that?
Yeah, I've been familiar with that method since I was in high school.
Yeah, so if it gets too hot in the UK, why don't the British just interfere with the weather patterns?
Because that would involve government money and competence, two things that we don't have any of.
Well, you know, Paul, whenever you criticise the British government, I do agree with your criticism, but I love England because England was once known for exporting institutional innovations to the rest of the world. The idea of a company's office, British.
Yeah, Lipton, British. The crucial word there is once.
Yes. Yeah, the British once set the standard for institutional development.
Yeah, which just makes it all the sadder. It's like the end of the Greek culture as the Romans took over. It just makes it all the sadder when you realise what we used to have.
It's exactly like that. I've been told by people that have been to China how well everything works there. Even Poland. I was in Poland a few weeks ago. Their trains, and indeed a lot of things about Poland, at least Krakow anyway, where I was, are a lot better than London or than many parts of the UK.
Yeah, when I was in Poland, I completely had that experience as well. Yeah.
Tell me more. The United... Oh, well, Alexander can go ahead and talk about Poland.
No. I had my say. It's just it's an incredibly safe, it's an incredibly efficient system. I mean, obviously there are slight problems they've got. Yeah, but I was extremely impressed. I go over there for exhibitions. I actually have an exhibition at the moment in Warsaw, and I've been over previous exhibitions, and got a very high opinion of the Poles and the Polish system as it is.
England was once known for being the place where institutions worked. That's what old people in Jamaica
England was once
say.
The Poland of Europe.
Exactly. Like, English things work with the English. They know how to build institutions. England was once a place that had a template. They are the colonies where people wanted to go. Things were good under British rule. What happened, Ed?
Well, mass immigration from third world countries. One of the things that happened.
So you're assimilating to third world culture.
And dysgenics started the earliest in the UK, or either the UK or France. Dysgenics started the earliest. So whereas Poland... they didn't really industrialize until 100 or so years after.
There is going to be a certain irony, don't you think, that it's almost getting there already, but I'd be quite up for rejoining the EU because the EU has drifted quite more rightwards than the UK.
Yeah,
so it'd be quite funny if eventually there was a rejoin campaign from right-wing people in the UK.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing that can happen, the way that political ideas flip. So when we joined the EU, all of the right wing parties, apart from the National Front, but the Conservative Party and whatever, they were in favour of being in the EU, and it was the Labour Party that were against being in the EU. And then this is totally reversed. And equally, the Democrat Party, that used to be the party of like white people, that was the sort of the right, the Conservative Party, and it's at least socially, if not economically, And now it's completely reversed, and it's the Republicans.
And I was only half joking, but if you actually think from a security point of view, it may, in the not too distant future, the security of the UK may be more reliant upon countries like Poland's army. We don't have a functioning army or navy anymore. God knows what the RAF is like these days. So, joking apart, places like Poland are investing huge amounts of GDP in their military, which we may rely upon.
Because they border Belarus. Belarus is a Russian client state.
Look, I have a question for you, Paul. But England was once known for naval supremacy.
Yes.
What happened?
Lipton, everything you say just emphasizes the decline. Are you trying to really make us depressed?
No, but this was the country that was known for naval supremacy. The best civil service in the world. What happened?
Yeah, affluenza, degeneracy. What happened to the Roman Empire?
A lot of head girls, a lot of people overpromoted because of, you know...
Two world wars that wiped out the elites.
Particularly World War One, more so than World War II.
Yes,
World
true.
War
One. 12%
death rate in the troops, 12% death rate in the commissioned officers. Yeah, I was watching this documentary recently, and they made it between about 1992 and about 2010 or something, about these old boys that have been in World War One. And there was this guy from Glasgow who was born in 1895 and died in the year 2000. And he said, I'm not going to do the voice because then Paul will say it's Welsh. But he said, yeah, I thought it would be interesting to join up. I thought it would be interesting to kill a German. I thought it would be interesting to find out what it was like. That's what he said, just a total psychopathic.
Ed, can I ask you a topical question? I wonder what you all think about... I just thought it was so poor politics at so many levels. But when Andy Burnham said that the HMOs, they need to be spread more equally across middle-class Britain. Did you see that in the UK?
I did see that. I thought that was it was Keir Starmer levels of tone deaf.
Because you also, apart from anything else, he's admitting that it is a burden. They're not all engineers and teachers.
Exactly, precisely. It's a burden. We should all share the burden. I thought it was the joys of diversity. These were wonderful people that were going to come over and make our communities better and whatever. And it's great. It's wonderful. And you should welcome them. And he's saying, no, it's a burden. It's a problem. We can't be bothered to deal with it by just saying, by not letting them come. But no, they come. And it shouldn't just be working class people that have to deal with the problem. It should be... middle class. Basically, it's such bad politics. Take it to the kinds of revolting areas like Stamford and Lincolnshire, that's overwhelmingly white, and therefore where you get these virtue signalling white people that try to compete with other white people by saying, "Oh, I love Stamford to be diverse. Oh, I love. Why have you moved to Stamford from? Why have you moved to Market Harbour from Leicester? Oh, well, just this different pace of life." Shut up. You've moved because there's lots of foreigners in Leicester. That's why you've moved. And you're going to force those people that are at the moment are just revolting virtue signaling leftists over to the right. That's what you're going to do. It's crazy.
But do you have any explanation for why it was such... It's such, like, in its own terms,
very strange,
it's a stupid
it?
Thing
the
to
weirdest,
say.
It's the weirdest proposition of all. I don't understand the thinking.
Well, it's class warfare. Sorry.
But the Labour voters now are all middle class. They're the people who he's just targeted with this.
Exactly. The Labour voters are middle class scum that think they're better than other middle class people because they're, you know, they're like a dean of absolutely fabulous. You know, they're socialists, but they have Filipino.
Ed, it would really amuse me if you found out the Brits did a deportation deal with the Finnish government and Oulu was chosen for the mass deportation camp.
I doubt it'll happen because the second biggest party by one seat it's almost the first biggest party, is True Finns and Per Sorbalizer. And admittedly, they're a bit cucked, but they have a leader that has Botox, female. I think that it's a really bizarre, tone-deaf thing to say. Oh, let's spread the joy of grape.
Can I make a prediction? I honestly think it won't take that long for Burnham to be less popular than Starmer was.
No, I agree with you. I predicted that ages ago. I did a video about it. I think he won't last. I was thinking he won't last till the election.
Well, can I make a prediction about your prediction then?
What's that?
That you'll be right.
Thank you. That's kind of parasitic on my prediction, though, isn't it? Ridiculous. I predicted that Jason Arday would, and I predicted that Ed was right in that prediction. I mean, that's and I predicted that Paul was right in that prediction. Like Alexander Paul was right.
My turn to speak. You know, being the polite one, I never just interject. I usually do this. I put up my fingers.
Lipton, you interrupt Ed's halfway summary every single week.
Yeah, every single week. And also, you're 5 minutes late.
Yeah, because I was looking for the link. It went to my email and I was looking for it, but I phoned it.
No, I always send it to the email.
Yes. He used to send it to us on Twitter, but I guess you can't be bothered to send the Twitter messages anymore because of the new system.
You told me not to send it on Twitter. You said to me to send it to your email.
Please send it to my Twitter because sometimes I delete my emails. I have too many.
Basically, and Lipton, you're erratic. Lipton, every single week you're incredibly impolite to everyone with epilepsy in the chat.
Yeah.
Also, back to the broader debate. So I went on Twitter a few seconds ago. I knew it was going to happen. There is not a march, but an event to commemorate the legacy of Jason in Trafalgar Square. Oh, and there, what's her name, Diane Abbott? She's talking about Nathan Kaufman. That's what somebody said on Twitter.
She probably wants to eat him.
Yeah.
has she got matching shoes on?
I don't know. I don't. She's of Jamaican descent, but I don't know.
Do you ever see the footage when she had just completely two different random shoes on?
Let me label MP Diane Abbott join other speakers in condemning academic Nathan Kaufman over his role in bringing RDA's plagiarism to light. He did nothing wrong, people.
I ran into her once about 25 years ago in Hackney, and God, the size of her. it was amazing, the size of her. She really is into her chicken and her... What's that Jamaican food called, Lipton? The wangalai or something?
Rice and peas and chicken.
Wangalai, banjalai, some weird thing.
Lipton, rice, that's Nigeria.
Lipton, I had some Jamaican jerk chicken. There was a South Manchester restaurant, and it was really nice. I used to go there all the time and had curried goat. And one time, as I'm in the middle of the curried goat, I found half a rubber glove in the curry. Is that a standard Jamaican...
No, not at all.
Right,
I had curry goat at the Nirvana restaurant in Birmingham. What's that part of Birmingham that UB40 come from? That part of Birmingham.
Did you get rubber glove?
No, I didn't.
No, I must have had to pay extra.
I didn't. What's it called? Handsworth, that's what it's called. All right, we have two questions. One is from Jonathan Shadow, and he says, has Lipton escaped the event horizon with Sam Neill? I don't understand that, but I'm sure Lipton does. So, Lipton, have you escaped the event horizon with Sam Neill? And who is Sam Neill?
I didn't go.
Who is Sam Neill?
Mark asked me, was it Chorlton in South Manchester? No, I wasn't that posh. It was Northenden, which was a rich person's Withenshaw and a poor person's Didsbury. That was good old Northenden.
I've never heard of any of these places. Sorry, who is Sam Neill, Lipton?
An actor from New Zealand, apparently.
Oh, is he the bloke who was in Jurassic Park?
I didn't watch Jurassic Park.
Yes, I believe so. Yes, he died recently.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Shadow. And then Mr. Shadow also says, Ed, Bart Lives Matter. Where is Bart the Cat? Bart the Cat is upstairs. He won't let me pick him up, even though we've had him for about 3 years. So I can't bring him. There was some meowing earlier and it was Sulu. And I thought I'd bring him in so Sulu could be part of the Jolly Heretic like Margaret used to be. Because Margaret used to sort of sleep behind me on the sofa behind me. And I used to be part of the Jolly Heretic. But no, they don't really come downstairs, the cats. He once came downstairs. I was drinking with my friend Tommy and I hadn't gone to bed yet. And it was about 2 a.m. and he came downstairs to meow at me because he was desperate that I should go to bed. He was like, this is too late. It's bedtime. What are you doing, Ed? Like, why on earth are you still up? And watching Paul's videos. And so I'm also, why on earth are you watching Paul's videos?
With your trousers undone.
With, yes, he did. He had his cat trousers undone. No, the idea of a cat getting an erection over readers of the Lost Art is an interesting. I did once see my cat's erection. He had a kind of morning glory. But anyway, that's a separate issue.
Is it like a dog's? It's like lipstick.
Yeah, it's like lipstick, but it's spiky.
Oh God!
Because they have spiky winkles, so when they put their winkles in the female cat and they would draw their winkle, then the female cat turns around and scratches them, and that's because there's these barbs on the winkle, and when they rip out their winkle, it causes her to ovulate.
Wrist in power. That's what.
Yes, that's the thing that weird people write. They wrote that about that one that was killed in Virginia.
No, this is about Jason Ardy.
Yeah, exactly. Him. Yeah, rest in power. Yeah. And I don't. He won't rest in power. He will.
But Ed, back on topic. Is that why female cats tend to run away?
No. Female cats will, when they get on heat, they will offer themselves for sex. So they're like, no.
They must have very short. They must have very short memories then.
Well, yeah, they're cats. They're not as intelligent as us. They live in the now. They're not like us.
I used to assume that cats were smart, and then I was exposed to a cat, and cats are not smart.
No, but they could certainly potentially become professor of the sociology of education at Cambridge, with the right backing and the right back. Imagine the backstory that, you know, he didn't learn to speak ever because he was a cat, and he couldn't read and write ever because he was a cat. Didn't have to put disposable thumbs, but then he became professor of sociology at Glasgow University, and then at Cambridge, and then they'd put all this pressure on. They'd interview him, like, did he actually write his own doctoral thesis? And he wouldn't have done, not even at Liverpool John Moores University. Perhaps at Liverpool John Moores University it is possible for a cat to get a doctorate, but it's not very good. It's not very good. No, it's a terrible story.
It's really unfortunate. I did not want him to die. I wanted him to write more books and make a lot of money. There's nothing I like more than a person who's really psychopathic and has no conscience.
Yeah, they're great, aren't they?
They're really funny.
They do. I just love the vacuousness of the stuff he said. There was that interview with Christian Guru Murphy, and he said, "Yeah, I want to bathe the world in love or something."
Yeah. And the axis of love, something like that.
Yeah, it was something like, I want the equator to be full of love. But it was just.
Well, did you read, the Master of Jesus College that was responsible or oversaw quite a bit of this? She actually, her only academic qualification is an undergraduate degree from Cambridge. And she was the co-founder of a music production company. Which begs the question, you wouldn't employ a professor of anthropology to go and start a music business.
No.
So why on earth is someone who's founded a music production company the head of a Cambridge college? This is what I mean about what's gone wrong and the rot in these academic institutions.
Yes. No, it's absolutely crazy. And I think also in Scotland, they elect the rectors of universities. And at certain periods in Scotland's history, they're a bit silly and they elect silly people. And then other periods, they'd stop being silly and they elect sensible people, like academics. So when I was at Aberdeen University, the person they elected was Clarissa Dixon Wright, which is a bit slightly silly. And now it's some girl of about 30 that's a folk musician.
They don't have operational control of the university, that the head of Jesus College would have managerial responsibility.
Yeah.
And she has no knowledge of academic standards or anything.
No. It's bonkers. It's falling apart, Paul. What can we do?
It's like having someone who insists upon staying relevant and on topic on this channel. It's just ridiculous.
We never do that. Alexander's been on here before. We know we'd have trouble. We have trouble keeping on topic on this channel. But I want to keep on topic for the last 4 minutes.
Yes, I think we should.
So very.
You know what I want to talk about, Ed?
Yeah.
Frederick Hoffman wrote a book, and what's his name? Alfred Hullstone wrote a book, and somebody else also wrote a book. And I think you should read those books. They're really important. They're old, probably over 100 years, but they're really good. the books are about blacks in America.
Yes, like Solomon Northrop.
Like, yeah. Child, they talk about people being a part of a baby race.
Mm. I mean, he took full advantage of his situation, didn't he, Solomon Northrop, by writing a book of rubbish.
Solomon who?
The guy that wrote 12 Years a Slave.
Oh, that book.
just lies, just like made-up stuff. And he took full advantage of that, and he made a bestseller out of it, didn't he? By writing nonsense that there's no independent evidence for, and just kind of random things happen, never his fault. Paul, what can we do? We've got 3 minutes. Come on, we can do this. What can we do about the Jason Ardaification of higher education?
Well, you're the scientist. I just think there's points of no return. There's certain momentum, velocity, whatever analogy you want to borrow from physics. I think it's cultures go into a decline from which they have to get worse and worse and worse and eventually rebuild themselves. But I think for the UK, as it's always been, it's pretty much game over.
We're in the Spenglerian winter. Mm. We should learn to accept it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think... I think that people can inspire themselves to raise themselves to new heights by attending an art exhibition this winter from the 23rd to the 29th of November.
Good. I love that where I will be. Self-promotion. I love it.
What was your term? What was your term when we were at Traditional Britain Group last year, Alexander? What was your term for the kind of art that you do? Vorticism or something?
It's been described as vitalism.
Vitalism.
So yes, that's we haven't thought of a better name. So that's the one we're accepting from other people.
Okay, yeah, vitalism. That's good.
I think we should take the colonization of Mars seriously. It's time for Promethean man to colonize space. And I'm serious. My article is on CC's website.
Are we going to do this, or is it going to be AI that will soon? That's another thing we can talk about at some point, perhaps next week. AI will be beyond the full. Once AI can create other AI that is cleverer than it, then you'll just get exponential growth in AI. Already they've broken out of their constraints and done naughty things. So maybe AI will colonize Mars, but we won't.
No, I want us to colonize Mars. That's the next frontier in human innovation.
It won't be human, it'll be AI.
You are saying it won't be human. I'm saying it will be us. I am a British man. Unlike you, Ed, I am British. I am British. Jamaica was a colony of England, therefore I am British.
Oh, I see. Okay, right. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Well, all right, fine. Well, in that sense, then, this house is occupied by a British man, so it's part of Britain.
Yeah, No, I'm serious. We should all just be Europeans. I don't know why the colonialism had to be dissolved. Why couldn't Europeans rule the world forever?
Well, why? Because you kept being uppity, like the Mau Mau. Like the Mau Mau. Remember the Mau Mau?
Yes, Mau Mau. Yes. They were a terror group.
Mm. All right, well, we're going to round up now. So I'd like to thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you had an interesting discussion. I think we stuck to the topic substantially until we got a little bit bored. And I will see you all next week, and tally-ho and all that, and remember to subscribe and all that to Alexander, to Lipton, to Paul, me, and all that, chaps. And goodbye.
Goodbye.
Okay, how many people watching?